Today on Rocking the Suburbs.
77 was the year for outer space. Hey peoples, this is Jim Lenihan, your old friend, old Jim. I am here on today's episode of Rockin' the Suburbs to try to give a little jump start to a recurring feature we had tried a bit in the past. I'll get to that in a moment. First, I want to thank, of course, my good friend and co-host, Patrick Foster. And welcome to the show, everyone. All right. It's good to be on here. I know I'm not on as often as Mr. Patty, but I try. And, you know, we all have our burdens to bear. Now, here's what I want to do. Before I get into this feature and what have you, I do want to do a little bit of promotion here, especially for Suburbs Fest South, which will be August 3, 4, and 5 in Louisville, Kentucky. We want you to be there. There's information on suburbspod.com. Go there, click on the Suburbs Fest link, or I think we have a Vandy. It's suburbspod.com/fest. You can try that too. Anyway, you'll find all the information there. Here's how cool it's going to be, though. We are going to have some live music by Dash Riprock, and also a local Louisville band called The Excuses. We're also going to do some live podcast recording, which will include some audience interaction, audience participation. So that'll be a lot of fun. And then we'll also do our patented, trademarked live hootenanny. What that is? Well, that's an open mic night, basically. It's our version of it. You can come out, play a couple of songs for the group. Or if you want, you can participate in live band karaoke. We have the band Frank Muffin ready to back you up, and they'll have a lot of songs ready to go and the lyrics for you and everything. So just like karaoke, except you are fronting a real actual live rock and roll band. All right. And then there's also going to be a baseball outing, probably some bourbon drinking if you're into that. If not, that's okay too. Come join us anyway. It'll be a lot of fun. August 3, 4, 5. Louisville, Kentucky. Go get the information at suburbspod.com. There's also a deal on a hotel there at the Galt House where the group will, much of the group at least, will be staying. All right. So that's that. Now, what was this recurring feature I mentioned? Well, it was something we tried to start. It originated from a series that Patrick was doing called What Was First, and that was based on various record labels and what was their first release. And then I thought, well, why don't we extend that and make it a little more personal and do what was first, as in what was the first record people bought, you know, like with their own money, not like gifted to you or whatever, but like you actually took your little kid money. No, the money wasn't little kid. Your little kid hands with the money grasped inside them and handed it over to that record store clerk and purchased either a piece of vinyl or a cassette. Maybe it was even an 8-track back in the day. I don't know. Or it would have been a CD for some of you younger folks, younger than old Jim. That's all fine too. So what was that first one that you bought? I'm going to talk about my first. Okay. So let's see here. The first record I bought was in 1977. I would have turned 10. In 1977. Now, I wish I could say, looking here at a list of albums that came out in 1977, I wish I could say that, you know, the first album I ever bought was perhaps Television's Marquee Moon or David Bowie's Low or Nevermind the Bollocks, Here's the Sex Pistols or Elvis Costello's My Aim is True or the Clash debut album or the Ramones' Rocket to Russia, or Wire's Pink Flag, or Iggy Pop's Lust for Life, or even Fleetwood Mac's Rumors. Like, that would make sense for more sense than the others I mentioned, probably for a 10-year-old to buy. Rumors, right? That was huge. But no. The first album I bought was this. Okay, and of course, that is Sticks. That song you heard was the title track to their album, The Grand Illusion. And a young Jim purchased that album in 1977. Now, The Grand Illusion, that was the band's seventh album by that point. Wow. Seventh album. So I wasn't buying a record by some, you know, young contemporary. I was buying a record from, you know, pretty old guys already, right? When you're 10 years old, they would have been really old by comparison. Their seventh album. Okay, so this is interesting. A little numerology for you. That was their seventh album. It was released on July 7th, 1977, or 7777. Pretty clever, those Sticks guys. Came out on A&M Records, and it was produced by the band, produced by Sticks. All right, now, the album The Grand Illusion peaked at number 6 on the Billboard album chart. It produced 2 top 40 singles. One song called Fooling Yourself, parentheses, The Angry Young Man, that went to number 29. Course, their big hit from this album went to number 8, and it was The Juggernaut, Come Sail Away. Grand Illusion was Styx's breakthrough album. It took them 7 albums to get there. They had a little bit of success before that. I'll talk about that in a moment here. But this was it. This was their breakthrough album. It went triple platinum. Yes, that means it sold more than 3 million copies in the United States of America. All right. Now, what attracted me? What attracted young Jim to Styx and the Grand Illusion? Well, thinking back on it and listening to it fresh, I think part of it was the sound of the band. Okay, so, you know, they had a sort of a prog rock sound, right? I don't know if they get labeled a progressive rock band per se, but certainly it's there, right? You can hear it. And I think when you're a kid, or especially a kid in the 70s, maybe there's something to that, right? It's so in your face. It's so unsubtle that it just hits you, right? And it hits your brain and you're like, this is something. This feels like something big and exciting. I guess, right? You know, when you're that age, when you're in elementary school, you're not looking to sort of pick things apart and examine them, right? You just want something that hits you right in the pleasure center. So I guess there was something to just that big, bombastic sound. Now, it did have pretty strong, you know, rock and roll guitars. Electric guitars came right through. So there at least was something you could say like was a bit of kind of, you know, young fist pumping maybe. But then it also had the synthesizers, which you have to take yourself back to the 70s. Synthesizers were not really, a big deal. They were just sort of emerging in rock music. Synthesizers sort of felt futuristic in 1977. I think there was something there, again, that as a kid, you sort of felt there was a bit of a cool factor, maybe, to the use of synthesizers. Like, this is not your parents' music. This is something else. This is something new and fresh, kids, right? So there's that. So I think that combination of those things really had appeal. And I will tell you, I'm not the only one. This was a big record among my classmates back then, and I guess would have been fourth grade at 10 years old, something like that. Now, one other thing I want to say, then this would have attraction to the young kids. There was also something to the song Come Sail Away, which at the end of the song, you learn that these figures being sung about were not angels asking them to come sail away, but they were aliens. So again, make yourself 10 years old in 1977 and you're like, wow, mind blown. That is so cool, right? I'm not the only one who feels this way about the song. I found an interview with one of the band members. That would be James J.Y. Young, guitarist for Styx. And here's what he had to say in the interview. He said, I had suggested Come Sail Away become not a song just about a sailing ship, but that it should morph into a song about a starship, which was my idea. He said that twice in that sentence. It was his idea. Getting back to J.Y., Come Sail Away was also lifted by the release of Star Wars and Close Encounters of the Third Kind in the same year. So 77 was the year for Outer Space. So there you go. All right. So that's about all I can say as to why this particular album was the first album I bought. But that's the truth, folks. That's what it was. Now, let me tell you a little bit about Styx. Styx formed in Chicago, 1972. Their members were Dennis DeYoung on vocals. He also played keyboards. James J.Y. Young, I just mentioned, guitar. He also did some vocals and I think sang lead occasionally. Chuck Panazzo on bass and John Panazzo, brother, on drums. They also had a guitarist when they formed named John J.C. Kurulewski. I hope I have that right. In 1975, JC was replaced by Tommy Shaw. And that was a key ingredient, I think, because Tommy Shaw, I think to this day, anyone who looks back on Styx, if you do such a thing, thinks of Tommy Shaw as sort of the sort of real rocker in the band, I think. Tommy Shaw brought something, a certain element to the band, perhaps a little harder edged and certainly kind of a straightforward sensibility, I think. All right. Now, before the aforementioned Grand Illusion album, Styx had one hit song. It was on their second album. It was called Lady, kind of a syrupy ballad kind of thing. And they also had, in those six previous albums, they had three gold albums, Styx 2, Equinox, and Crystal Ball. So they were doing okay. They were getting some radio airplay, certainly with Lady, and building up a little bit of a fan base. Now, as I mentioned, The Grand Illusion, 1977, that was their big breakthrough album. And let me read you what a couple folks had to say about it. Well, Billboard was pretty kind, at least something I found here says, Grand Illusion is Styx's most mature creation, as this concept LP is an existential commentary on the human condition. So there you go. Like a lot of prog rock bands, Styx like to have kind of concept albums or pseudo concept albums, some kind of thread, some kind of theme to them or whatever. This one being about how life is not as it seems, right? It's a grand illusion. I mean, I think they say it right there. These were not concepts that I was too concerned about as a 10-year-old. So again, the appeal of it, of this album, was not so much lyrical, except for the part about climbing aboard their starship and headed for the skies. Okay? But anyway, there you go. Existential commentary on the human condition. Isn't everything, though, really? I should also note here that the album was noted for its cover art, which you'll have to take a look at. It's hard for me to describe, but it does very much look like something that you might see, you know, in an art gallery, that kind of thing. The cover art was by Alton Kelly and Stanley Moose, I'm not sure. It is modeled after Belgian surrealist René Magritte's 1965 piece titled La Blanc Sang, which means the blank check. All right. One more thing I want to say about this album. At the time, the band went on tour. I was too young to go to a rock concert at that time, but I do want to mention here that I looked up this 1977 Grand Illusion tour, and it's kind of crazy. let's see, they started touring. Well, they were touring in 77 before this album came out. I think this was a band. It was a pretty hardworking band, and I think they toured a lot back then. But let me just tell you that in 1977, let's see, as I mentioned, I was too young to go to the rock concerts at that point, but they did stop in in the city where I lived, my hometown, Toledo, Ohio, on September 8th, 1977, played at the Toledo Sports Arena, which was a minor league hockey venue, essentially, and did have a lot of concerts, and was in downtown Toledo, and to be frank, it was kind of a dump. But I did go to some shows there, not a lot. But I did go to a couple shows there later on in life, but not this Styx show. But let's see here. They played the Toledo Sports Arena. The opening act was Spirit. And I want to mention these opening acts real quickly because I find them very interesting. Right before that show, they did a show in Fort Worth, Texas. Two shows back-to-back in Fort Worth. And right before that, two nights in Houston. And the opening band was Kiss. How about that? I guess it's opening. It says other act type. Perhaps it was a co-headlining. I don't know. Maybe Styx opened for Kiss. I don't know. It doesn't really specify. But anyway, they were on a bill with Kiss there. And some other really interesting openers for them. One point, a couple of shows, Mink DeVille opened for Styx. Now, Mink DeVille, you know, more like a New York punk artist, right? So that's kind of interesting. Uriah Heep. Oh, wow. They played at the Sports Arena also May 27th, 1977. That would have been before The Grand Illusion came out. And other bands on the bill were Uriah Heep and The Dictators. Wow. So how about that? Yeah. All over the place back then, these tour promoters putting together these bills. So Styx played in May of 77 in Toledo and then again in September in Toledo. So you can see this is a band that really developed quite a following, all right? Now, one last thing here I want to say about The Grand Illusion. I did find some reviews. I dug out some reviews at the time. Well, actually, I could only find one real review. One thing I looked at here is the Rolling Stone album guide, which is, you know, sort of a Bible of albums and runs through all of them. Let's see. The Rolling Stone album guide gave The Grand Illusion 2 stars. Two stars. Now, I will say, let's see. That's on a scale 1 to 4. One to five. I'm sorry. It's on a scale 1 to 5. 2 stars. I will say that the high water mark for Styx, all the albums on here, was 2.5. So there you go. But I do also have a Rolling Stone review, actual review from the time, 1977, written by Joe Fernbacher. I'll just read you a passage here. According to Joe, what Joe says is, Grand Illusion sallies forth with cuts that encompass the rage of heavy metal and the lugubrious smoothness of the progressive haze. So there you go. That's kind of saying the guitar and synthesizer working together, I guess, to form something. Something. He also goes on to say, Grand Illusion maintains the same kind of musical imagery Styx has had all along, simple, effective noise for the teenager in search of a progressive thrill. So there you go, Joe, you're saying exactly what I was feeling at the time. So thank you for that. Okay. Now, one more thing here about Styx. Let's just, you know, close the book here on Styx. After the Grand Illusion, they put out more records. There were 4 more in this initial era before they went into breakups and reunions and so on. But in terms of the core Styx era, 4 more albums after The Grand Illusion. 3 of those also went triple platinum. 3 more. So that means 4 total triple platinum albums for Styx. Wow. And 1 more also went platinum. So there you go. Wow. Quite a run on the charts there. They were moving a lot of units. All right. I wasn't the only one buying. Let's see. Those records that came out after The Grand Illusion were Pieces of 8, Cornerstone, and Paradise Theater. Those were the 3 more triple platinum albums. I did not purchase Pieces of 8, nor Cornerstone, but I did have Paradise Theater. Paradise Theater was pretty huge. Again, that came out in early 80s sometime. And then, of course, after that, after Paradise Theater was an album that it did sell platinum, at least, it kind of killed the band for a little while. And that album was called Kilroy Was Here with the famous song Mr. Roboto. All right. After that, the band sort of broke up, reformed, that sort of thing. They currently are still out there, although not with Dennis DeYoung. Dennis DeYoung hasn't been part of the band for 20-some years. He has toured solo, I know. So you have one of those deals with sort of competing factions of fans of the band, I guess. Some might go see the singer who launched a solo career and probably does sing some of the band's old songs, and then the band itself continuing without that singer and playing the songs that way. Although Styx did not have really just one lead singer. Dennis DeYoung was one. Tommy Shaw was really the other. And as I mentioned, even JY got in the act from time to time. One more thing I should mention about the current incarnation of Styx is I know a guy, a former coworker of mine. His name is Joel Zuckerman. His brother, Todd Zuckerman, is the drummer in Styx and has been for some time. So that's kind of cool. All right. Now, last thing I want to say here is, all told, Styx notched 16 singles in the top 40. 16. Wow. And of those, 8 of them were top 10 hits. So there you go. A band I think you don't hear about too often anymore. There are a lot of reasons for that. I think time and taste of music pass Styx by. I think they were of a certain era, but you know, they had a very good run. And as I said before, popular with the kids. All right, I'm going to get out of here. And while I will say that Styx and I have grown apart over all these years, you never forget your first. All right, I'm going to get out of here now. Thanks very much for listening to this. I would love to hear other people talk about the first record they ever bought. I'm kind of going with albums here, but if you want to do a single, that's fine too. If you want to talk about the first 45 you ever bought, that's fine. Whatever it means for you, you know, put it out there. Here's how you can do that. We do want to hear your voice for this sort of thing. So one thing you can do is you can record a voice memo like on your phone or your computer. Just very easy these days. Record yourself talking about your first album. And then you email it to us at rock@suburbspod.com. Or if you want to just pick up the phone and call and leave a message on our voice recording machine, that's fine too. That number is 612-440-1984. And with that, I want to thank again Patrick Foster. I'm Jim Lenihan, and we'll talk to you later.
Cindy.
Hey, Sam.
I was wondering, you said you'd save a dance for me, so can I have it now? I mean, if you're not busy.
I'm not busy.